Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as audio and video interviews of writers of all genres, award-winning and best-selling authors of all kinds. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. The PNWA hosts a yearly writers' conference in the summer, but in the fall, they offer some great courses on writing and all aspects of writing, from the craft to the business side of it. I'll be teaching a couple classes through the PNWA. If you've listened to my Fearless Writing series that I've been doing through the summer and fall, or through the summer and now into the fall, you might be interested in taking my Fearless Writing workshop on October 8th. That's Saturday morning, October 8th. This is going to be out in Issaquah, Washington. And then starting on the 22nd of October, I'll be teaching a 5-week memoir class. So if you have a memoir you're working on or would like to work on, go to pnwa.org. You can sign up for either of those classes or any of the classes that they've got available. You can take those classes whether you're a member of the Pacific Northwest Writers Association or not. So that's pnwa.org. Well, writers, you know, these days, writers are more and more responsible for their own publicity. It seems to be the case. And some people like to hire publicists to do that for them. And I met through a mutual friend, I think is a forward-thinking publicist. Today's guest, Mr. Dan Blank, who's the founder of We Grow Media. And I don't always like to talk about publicity, but when I find the right person, I really do. Dan's worked with hundreds of people in his online courses and his consulting work and his workshops, and he's also worked with people like Random House and Hachette Book Group and the Sesame Workshop and Workman Publishing, and his writing has been published in Poets and Writers Magazine, Compose Journal, the National Endowment for the Arts Works Blog, Writer Unblocked, and Folio the Magazine. So let's get this man on and talk about the wide and wonderful world of publicity. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm great, Dan. Thanks for being on. It's great to have you here. I talk to writers at these conferences I go to and classes I teach, and publicity is not their favorite part of the writing game, by and large. And that's why it's nice to have people like you who understand it, who understand and actually maybe even enjoy it. Is that accurate?
Well, the first thing is I don't call what I do publicity. And I think publicity is a very small thing. And when I think about what I do, when I work with writers, about clearly understanding the effect they want to have. And it's more just about connecting with readers. And to me, that's a different subset from pure publicity, more media and buzz oriented.
I see. And so do you address not just getting their names in front of people's eyes so they know who they are, but also the work itself in terms of what they're doing with the work itself?
That's up to the author. So typically what I'm helping them do, and I'll give an example. I was talking with a new client today. So today was our first day together. So their books are their books, and they're writing these historical fiction novels. How they frame that to the world is a big part of what I do. And what we talked about today was this idea of goals. Was she had many options about how she framed herself, because like many authors, she's not just one thing. And we talked about and her stories and what she's about. And more importantly, we talked conversations she wanted to be having. And what I think this does is it challenges an author to stop thinking of their book as a product in a marketplace that is sold next to Tide and in between toothpaste that we hope goes viral, we start thinking about the reality of this, which is as an author, you are engaging with other people. Your stories are being written by you, but they're being read by other people. And it's that conversation in someone's head where the magic happens.
Wow. You know, I'm so glad you said that because it's interesting. I just published an essay in the New York Times at the beginning of the summer. And it was this thing I've been wanting to share with the world for a long time. It's called No One Is Broken. It was about my relationship with my son, who was diagnosed when he was 7 on the autism spectrum. And it just taught me everything about what a human being is and what life is. And so I finally got this piece published in the New York Times. It was very exciting. The response to it was great. And interestingly, Dan, what I said to my wife after it came out and I started getting all the emails and getting the feedback was, this is the conversation I want to have. That's the exact words I use. This is the conversation I've been dying to have with the world, but I now feel freed up to do because of this one article. It has allowed me to begin expanding that conversation. That's the exact language I used. How about that?
I love it. I love it.
Isn't that great? So for instance, so you had this this historical novelist, and how did she respond to that framework? What's the conversation? Did that make sense to her? Was she able to work with that?
Yeah, that's one of the big reasons she hired me. So like most people, I'm working with the complete person. And most authors I talk to might have a day job. They might have other projects. They have families. They have health. And they have things that are important to them. So for this particular author, she did have this this organization that she had started, big part of her life. Some of the themes in her book are themes that she talks about in speeches with other people. So there's that real world element of it. She has hobbies and interests like any normal person. And I think that when you start looking at these as one thing, as the author in the world, about the effect that you want to have in the world, suddenly instead of saying, how do I whittle myself down to what I think an author looks like, you start really kind of honoring what makes you unique, and you start using this to your advantage. I think it's very easy for us to look at anyone famous. Steve Jobs has been the last decade and think, oh, sure, but he loved design, or he had this interesting sense, you know, whatever, and see that as a benefit. And I think that we have our own eccentricities and our own interests and see those as a benefit and use them proactively.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to make this – you have to – anytime you decide to become a writer, you are whittling down – I mean, just by necessity, you are selecting a genre – you're selecting a focus within the genre. You have to pick an angle that you're interested in. You can't write about every single thing all the time. So your creativity always occurs when you've decided to focus your choices in a specific direction, because that's the direction that's most interesting to you. It's actually a very creative choice. Do you think so? Oop. Oh, no. Dan, are you still there?
I mean, hear me?
For a minute you dropped out. So yes, I can hear you now. And but what I was, and I don't think our audience heard you. So I had said that the focusing is a creative choice.
Right, and that's where we start. So one, this is all about creativity, crafting a narrative.
Right,
and that's a lot of what we talked about was, what do you want your narrative to be? There was one particular topic in her platform where we talked about how it was such a polarizing topic that it would overshadow her narrative in a very profound way, where it would immediately have this sort of thing. So we talked about where she – not her goals, like where do you want to be in 5 years. We talked about, though, again, what does she want to be known for? What does she want to do? Where is the common thread across and again, when you think about a working author, someone who is hopefully – engaging with readers, who is writing articles, is mentoring others, is writing books. Most truly professional authors, you talk to work, they don't say, well, I spend all year in a cabin in the woods working on my novel.
Right.
They have a full life, and you realize it is a profession, and that each person gets to define that how they want. And I
you
think
know
the opposite is I just want to finish.
No, go right ahead.
Is waiting for something to happen to you. Waiting, Seth Godin phrase, but waiting to be picked by an agent, then waiting for the for the publisher to sign you, then waiting for them to tell you what they're going to do, mindset to think about you crafting this and these partners being along for the collaboration with you.
That's right. Oh, I'm glad you said that. So I hope our readers heard that, because in the truth is, once you get you really into this career, your agent and your publishers are collaborators. They don't anoint you. They don't take care of you, although they might a little bit, maybe help you some, but mostly they are collaborating with you to produce something. And when you can look upon them as your collaborators instead of the gatekeepers who have swung wide and allowed you in, it is such a more equal relationship, as opposed to that imbalance that I think a lot of writers attribute to the people in those positions of authority.
I absolutely agree. And I think that's part of this idea. You know, a lot of the work I do, it falls under this brand of platform. And people start saying, like, how many Twitter followers do I need to impress an agent and all of that? And I think what I think they're looking for is this sense that you are a good partner, that if they sign you, you are working to help the world. You are someone who is making it better. You're not someone who is passively just waiting or passively wants to do as little work as possible, demanding. And it really is like you think about a job, or I always think about this. Very often hire the plumber that we hire, not because they are the best plumber in the universe. We hire them because we know them, because we trust them, because we know how to talk to them.
Yeah,
I think it's very similar when you're finding collaborators. How many people don't get a job or don't get signed because they're not someone that people feel that they can work with in the right way?
That's right. You know, I interviewed the one guy I'm hoping to publish my next book. One of the reasons I would love to work with him is because I interviewed him, and after I was done with the interview, I thought, that's a guy I could have a beer with. That's somebody I could just sit and talk with for hours. I would love to have that guy publish my book, because I just get him because he seems to walk the walk that he's, and not just talk the talk. And so, and it's such a better feeling than, again, that gatekeeper mentality that is so often, I think, assigned to the people who seem to hold all our fortunes in their hand, you know. It's so
unequal.
And, you know, so something else that I thought was really interesting is that I think is really true, which is that the way you're framing marketing, publicity, platform, that whole world outside of just the writing itself, is that it's instead of framing it in terms of how do I get more people to buy my book, which is really all about what you can get, it's really focusing on what you're offering. What is the gift you're giving to the reader, to the world? What is it they can expect to get? Would you say that's true, that differentiation?
To a degree, I would also say it's again, going back to the idea of a conversation. It's very easy to think, made this thing, it will entertain you, you should buy it. I think it's very different than saying, I always think of this barbecue example where you meet someone at a friend's barbecue and you don't know quite who they are, but you have a conversation, and it's you as an author, you know, what kind of conversation do you want to have? Who do you want to sit down with?
Right.
That's
right.
Part of what you bring. I think too often we whittle it down to this thing that we figure if we sell it and it's produced mass quantity, our influence will grow. And it's not that can't happen. It's just that it usually doesn't happen. And when it does happen, it comes after thousands of conversations that the person has really honed. How do I connect with these people? How do I know what kind of conversations I want to be having? I also think that helps answer a lot of the issues that authors have, like social media. They're like, I don't want to be on social media. What do I say?
And
when you start thinking about it this way, it starts answering some of those questions.
It's so true. I love your approach. It's great because, in fact, I remember I started writing for Author Magazine. I started writing a blog every day, 5 days a week. And I realized part of the reason I thought it grew its following that it did was because I was very consistent in what I offered. It was a very sort of inspiring, that was my goal, was to have the readers always feel better at the end of the blog, feel more encouraged to write, feel more eager to write, be more interested and less afraid. And I always believed that if I was consistent like that, then the readers would know, they wouldn't know what I was going to say, but they would hopefully know what it was going to feel like. Just like when you have a conversation with a friend you love, you don't know what you're going to say, but you know the kind of tenor of that conversation. Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to offer. Like, this is what it's going to feel like to read my stuff. And if you like it, come on back, because it'll be the same thing tomorrow, more or less, you know.
I also think it's an opportunity. When we talk to a lot of authors, we think that we're selling one piece of value. And when you look at a lot of authors who have a YouTube channel or have a great Twitter following or who have a weekend retreat that they teach or they do
right.
speeches, you realize, yes, the books are the main thing. They're part of it, but there's more. They're
yeah.
the way you talk. They're what you embody. They're what you're about. It's your humor or your seriousness.
Yeah.
These are other values that you can offer to people.
And so how did you come to this work, Dan? What were you doing before We Grow Media existed?
So I worked within Reed Elsevier, which is a large media company, and I worked with a lot of, essentially at the time, magazines. So I worked there for about a decade. I worked with a lot of the publishing titles like Publishers Weekly and Library Journal. They also had about 50 or 75 other brands. And my role evolved into this advocate for digital media, for social media, for blogging. So I was taking these editors and these space of We come up with an idea in a boardroom. We write the articles. The articles get published. We move on to the next article, to something where the reader had a voice. And now this sounds silly to discuss, but at the type of thing where journalists and almost felt offended that they had to bring the voice of the reader into their work. They had to respond to comments. They had to be on social media, that blogging was even a thing. And from that
right.
work, when I went out on my own in 2009, 2010, it just really hit that inflection point when e-commerce and digital publishing was really hitting, where
right.
any person felt that I can write a book and I can publish a book, which is monumental in human history. And
yeah.
saying, this is what I'm about, how do I translate that, and how do I engage with other people online, it just kind of hit where I was at exactly the right moment. And right when I started, this was intended to be a part-time thing. We had my son the month before I started the company.
Very
yeah. quickly, it did well, and we flipped it, where instead of me being the stay-at-home dad raising my son, my wife left her job so I could do this full-time from home.
Wow. Wow. Oh, how exciting is that?
Yeah, it was scary and awesome at the same time.
Yeah, but do you like the work?
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the key. And see, that's the key with I want the plumber who loves to be a plumber. I want the bartender who loves to tend bar. And I want the media platform expert to love platforms, you know.
Right.
You'll
yeah.
never be better at anything. You'll never be more inventive than what doing something that you love. You'll never be more original, you know. I just don't think it's possible.
I agree, and I think that's why with a lot of my work, even though we might talk about components like a website or a webinar or an ebook or a newsletter
right.
or Twitter, these are just, you know, tools in the toolbox. When you talk to that architect, there's a vision for how you want to, what the it communicates. And I love my work because it's not about Twitter or MailChimp or WordPress or Amazon.
Right.
It really is about talking to someone about what their goals are and what their vision is, and about connecting that to another person. We might be using these things in the process, but it really is about making someone feel fulfilled, connecting with another human being, and vice versa.
So let me ask you this. So let's say I worked with you. Let's say I was a client of yours. And I said, well, listen, I have this conversation I know I want to have. What would be the next question you ask me? Because I'm someone who could probably articulate the thing I really want to talk about, because I spent a lot of time thinking about that language. But what would be the next question you would ask a person like me? So I've got this magazine and these interviews and stuff and a book coming out. So what would be the next question?
Well, so the end goal of this is connecting with readers. So you're someone who has a
right.
vision of what you want to create. You're creating, you've put it into a package, and then you're probably saying, some people get this. I'll put a number, 100. I know
right.
that there's 50,000 who could benefit from it. So from there, what we're trying to really understand is, one, if you already know that vision part, these are my goals, this is my how I communicate it, then we flip it and we start really understanding the audience. Let's talk about the three different categories of your audience. Let's create personas. Let's go out there and do primary research on your audience. And this is the part a lot of people skip. Very often they'll just say, oh, there's some hashtags like AmWriting and this author hashtag. Let me start using that. And what I find is there's so much value in narrow casting, which is going specifically out to people who you feel might be your target audience and interviewing them and in asking them about themselves and in featuring them and in really in the trenches. And I think it's the difference. I have a friend who's a baker locally, and she talked about moving into a new community to open a bakery. And there's what the realtor sells you about a specific building and location and town. And she said, you know, she was sold to the realtor, but when she went there and just spent days and days out on that street in that town, what she observed, what she talked to people about was wildly different. And that's the trick, is doing that primary research to identify, well, who is my audience? What are their names? Let me talk to them. Let me interview other people who have done this, been down this road before me. That's the type of work that I think most people skip, and I think that's where the gold is. That's where you understand, this is how I can engage them. This is how I can connect with them because I understand that person. And in doing so, the channels begin to make sense. All of the marketing tactics begin to make sense.
I think that's really true, Dan, because I think one of the advantages I've had in my writing is all the teaching I've done, because I suddenly began to know who it was physically. I could, sometimes I feel like I could walk down the street and say, that's a reader of mine. That one isn't, but I think that one is over there. Because I start knowing who they are, and I start knowing what they're, just from the teaching and talking to them and teaching and talking and talking to them, understanding who it is that's drawn to my work and understanding what they're about. And it was incredibly helpful when I sold the most recent book, because I felt like I knew the psyche of the particular people I was hoping would buy the book. And that came from me meeting them in all these classes and workshops.
Right. And I'll give you an example of this. We think about this as the same example in something like Twitter, but a friend who came out with a memoir, and she bought a table at a local conference for people that she thought would like her memoir. So she went through 100 books. And she had to hand sell these books. And she did. She hand sold every one of them. And I have to be there with her that day. But I have to imagine that how she started people in the morning evolved over the day, where if one type of person walked up, just by looking at them, what they looked like or what they asked, she would know by the end of the day, there's five kinds of people that walked up. And I would talk to them in different ways based on who they are. So in that one day, had to have talked, sold 100 books, and it was like this, this little petri dish of learning that in fire, almost very quickly engaging with readers, understanding, well, what is it about your story that resonates with them? What is it they're looking for? Why are that? Learn to ask better questions, and that helps you understand your audience better.
Interesting. But of course, a lot of writers don't meet their audience. You know, a lot of writers are pretty, I mean, especially like, if you write young adult fiction, you will hear from your audience a lot. But if you write adult fiction, you may really not hear from your – adult readers often don't communicate with the authors that much. And so it can be tricky, I would think, as an adult fiction author – I'm thinking fiction in particular – that how do you meet those people? Because they aren't just, you know, hanging around a coffee shop with a sign around their neck saying, you know, legal thriller reader.
Well, that's your job. Your job is to go out and talk to these people. I mean, your job is to go to the indie bookstores and talk to the person behind the counter, to talk to the librarians, to talk to find three other authors in your state and have lunch with them, to find the 10 readers that you do know read your book and say, you know, talk to them. I run this mastermind group, and we have this woman in the group, and she took my advice to heart, and I've talked about I do these lunches. I go in the city once a week. And I have coffee with people, and there's no point to them other than to have a conversation. And she has started inviting her readers one by one out to lunch. So she's sourcing where they are in her general region, and she's going out to lunch with them.
My God.
She has gotten to know so well why they read her book, what their lives are like, what else they like to read, what they react to. And she's also had a lot of lovely conversations with people.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, that is such an awesome idea. I might have to try that. I might have to.
I think a lot of people look for tricks that scale. How a lot of people quickly, what is a best practice? What I often find is by the time you hear about some best practice about a Twitter chat or about vlogging or about email newsletters, 40,000 other people are already trying it and you're doing it kind of lamely. And we these things because we think we are being professional and smart and we want it to be efficient. And I just being laziness, not laziness because you're a bad person, but because we delay doing the hard, inefficient work of one by one making connection. And in doing so, that's what a community wants. I've helped create a festival downtown around storytelling this past year with a group of local people. We are maybe steering committee. We met one by one. To put together this festival that had like 25 speakers in it, we had to get to know the people on the Chamber of Commerce, the town officials, local business owners, local storytellers. And one by one, we learned what will resonate. And it was that kind of one-on-one work. And we had a very successful festival. It will be hopefully be much more successful next year. We do it again. And in that kind of work, we don't question that value of one-on-one. For some reason, when we think about online, we suddenly think that one conversation is meaningless. And I think it is one of the most valuable things you can invest in.
I love it. I love it. Because I love conversation. That's why I do these things. I told you, actually, before we started the show, I said I view this. Did I not say this, Dan? I said I view this as a conversation, less of an interview and more, if possible, as a conversation. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, it's been such a good conversation, it's almost over. It flew right by. But I have one more question for you, Dan. Now, we're not going to say what it is, but you have a book that you hope will be coming out early 2017. Is this true?
It is true.
Okay. All right. And so you've written some articles. Periodicals, but this is your first book. So now that you've spent some time, a little more time than usual as the writer and not just the arm of the marketing arm, answer this question for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
I'm staring out the window thinking.
Okay, good.
It really is about the value of communicating an idea efficiently and that to do what I want to say, it's about where someone is to hear it. And that when I'm crafting the articles or the blog or the book, it really is thinking with about how is someone receiving this? What is their mindset to this topic? Is it coming in an email or a book? And it becomes, to me, with my work, something I obsess about is really thinking about not just what I want to say, but how I say it by really putting myself in the context of the person reading it.
Right. Someone who isn't you has to be able to understand it.
Yes.
Some other person. It's mysterious, and it happens, though. It works. Well, Dan, best of luck. So if someone wants to work with you, they should go to wegrowmedia.com. Is that the website?
It is. Thank you.
We Grow Media. So if you want to work with this fine fellow, I'm sure he's going to be swamped after this, but get there fast. Wegrowmedia.com. Dan, best of luck. I think there'll be nothing but success for you from here on out. You sound so connected to what you're doing. It's inspiring.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome, Dan. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, conversations, people. It's a conversation. That's all writing is. It's a conversation. You start it. This is true. This is true what Dan said. You start the book, but your reader finishes it. They do. They finish it in their imagination. So you start the conversation, they finish it, and then they go and have it with someone else. You see, the ball just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. It's a beautiful thing. Ah, I will be back again next week. I hope to be doing another Fearless Writing class next week with the lovely Carla Pansiera. She'll have some questions, I believe, from high school students. Oh, yes, we can't leave them out. Until then, go do something you love. Can't go wrong.